Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I think they were arrested for drug dealing. Incredible. Welcome back to TF3. And the person making up the three this week with Kristen Hennage. Chris, welcome.
Evening.
Is Nipun Chopra from ULF, from WST? Got any other acronyms we can throw in? PhD?
PhD? I was just going to throw that out there. Why did you take away my punchline loss? It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
What does the PhD stand for?
Pretty hard, and it's a synonym for penis.
Good. Nice. Yeah. Thanks. Say dick on this. Don't worry about it.
Oh, pretty hard dick then.
Anyway, if you guys don't know who Nipun is, then you should. He hosts a Manchester United, and it'll sound unusual when I say it, a Manchester United and Liverpool podcast, which surprisingly works. Some of the reviews say not, but it surprisingly works. And he also hosts the World Soccer Talk podcast, which also does a Sunday night review, but it's shit, so no need to listen to that anymore. I'm only saying that because we also make a Sunday night review, and I also used to host the World Soccer Talk Sunday night review. Anyway,
it's only gone downhill since you left, Lawrence, because we have Chris on every week.
I listen every week, and it's actually fantastic. The weird thing is, I listen to three reviews of the weekend. I listen to Ramble, I listen to Football Weekly, and I listen to World Soccer Talk, and all three of them all say different things. It's only the front three that consistently says the same thing every week. So there you go. Varied views. There's only one place to start because it was Super Sunday this week, guys. And it's West Ham 0, Southampton 3. Chris, these are the breaks. Things just don't fall for West Ham in this game. And as much as Payet and co pushed at 2-0 down, when Noble got off the pitch, he said it could have been 6.
I think you alluded to the problem partly there in your
Mark Noble
question,
yeah.
Which was Payet. I think there's far too much reliance on him. I don't think West Ham have actually built on last season or built on an idea that doesn't involve him being incredibly influential. And again, you look at that bigger pitch, you look at the move to the stadium, not just in terms of the changing atmosphere, but the fact that they're now playing on more space, I think. That's difficult to keep up that same kind of play that they did last season. And I think it is the perfect storm of bad events that starts with a summer in which they couldn't get the targets they really wanted. They had to settle for players, I think, in the key areas, mainly striker, that they weren't too bothered about. And it's coming home to roost early in the season.
How do you see it over there, Nipun? Because obviously in England, and especially in London, there's so much coverage of the fact that West Ham have turned on themselves. They're cannibalising each other. There's the clip going around YouTube right now. Yeah, don't fucking interview him, man. He's a fucking disgrace. Whilst two angry men look at each other. It's so weird to watch sort of fans turning on each other. And yet, there was so much positivity at the beginning of the season. This is a new start. And not all West Ham fans are like that, because some of them are very reasonable people. Some of them, just like Donald Trump said. but some of them are, you know, they come over here. The West Ham fans, they come over here. They're rapists. They're drug dealers. You know, and some of them are reasonable people. For once, we found a use for Donald Trump quotes. But my point with this, Nipun, is that West Ham fans are suffering right now. No one's helping.
I mean, we talk about West Ham fans, and just at the end of the season, we saw them basically almost take down a bus full of Man United players, right? So there are those crazy fans, and they are turning on themselves a little bit, but I sympathize with them. Having said that, I sympathize them with a little bit, with them just a little bit, because I see that stadium. It's we've talked about it before on other shows. It feels as though it feels nothing like Upton Park, at least watching it. Of course, I've not been there. And there's some frustration with the way this team is playing. In the first half, Lawrence, I thought West Ham kept the ball pretty well, but created absolutely nothing. And it was only ever going to be a Southampton goal. And it came from basically the first time that Southampton counterattacked, they scored. And it has to be very frustrating for those West Ham fans.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, what is it at this point that Bilic can do? Because to some extent, this is a Bilic-created problem. I mean, you know, Dave will be waxing lyrical about Bilic's mistakes at this point, like he has week after week on this podcast. Is that part of it? I mean, you know, the point made by the West Ham fan who's apparently not worth listening to was, you know, if we get rid of Bilic, what do we do?
That is a good point. I'll give him credit for that. I think the issue I have watching them at this precise moment is he keeps naming one up top, and it tends to be Simone Zaza. I don't know if Zaza has the kind of skills you need to be a lone target man in England. I think realistically he needs more support around him. I've liked some of what Ashley Fletcher's been able to do, the lad they signed from Manchester United in the summer. Mm-hmm. In general, I think they need more support. I think he has to be willing to try a different kind of formation. The difficulty he will have in doing that is how do you then incorporate Payet? Because he's tended to work in sort of a midfield three off a striker, maybe in a number 10 role. I think today was in left midfield, or on Sunday was in left midfield.
It was sort of left, kind of. It was kind of left centre. So it was very much like the Labour Party right now. But it was sort of left centre, kind of trying to attack the D of the penalty area. I got distracted then thinking of. I heard Napoon make a noise, yeah. And I said the D, and it all got very distracting.
PhD, baby.
But you know what I mean by that, right? I mean, you know, he's sort of almost the Coutinho position, you'd say, Chris.
That's the thing as well, is it looks quite imbalanced. If you look at that midfield three that plays just behind Zaza, you've got Antonio Lanzini, Pai. For me, Antonio is as close as you'll get in that team to a traditional winger who'll want to go outside and want to challenge against the fullback and throw crosses in. Payet doesn't really want to do that for my money. Someone actually that likes to drift inside, see what he can do, pick passes, pick opportunities. And it just doesn't really work as a harmonious outfit. You then look at the fact that Gökhan Tor, who was brought in, I think, to play as a wide player, has been really poor. If I'm correct in saying this, a few West Ham fans have said they tried to get Sisto and settled for Tor or the other way around. They basically ended up with Tor, and that's looking an increasingly worse deal as the weeks go on. They just need some kind of change formationally, and I'm not sure necessarily how that manifests, because it will likely mean dropping one of the established players.
I mean, Napoon, I'm only putting it out there. I know that hindsight is, you know, it's 20-20.
30-60, right.
Well, sometimes it can be 50-50. But the point is that that West Ham over the summer are obsessed with a few things. Karen Brady, and like the Football Ramble have pointed out, oversaw the most successful stadium transition of all time. And it's not an unusual turn of phrase, because there have not been that many stadium transitions. And ultimately, calling it the most successful, you sort of think, what does that mean? You know, well, we made
captain of the Titanic. I always saw the most successful mid-cruise disembarkment.
Yeah. Exactly.
Too soon for that joke, Chris.
I mean, well, yeah, especially on the anniversary. But I mean, at the same time, you know, they were also obsessed with their status. They were obsessed with the fact they were moving in the right direction. You know, with portraying that image. You know, we've got the new stadium. We're going to be debt free. Which then turned out to be debt-free, caveat, from people we don't want to owe money to, but we aren't officially debt-free because we do still officially owe money to some other people. And not only that, but people were constantly saying, if they lose Payet, they lose the status. And it seems a little bit like everyone at West Ham was a bit distracted by keeping status and therefore Payet. ahead of the overall real progression of the team. And so we got a bit sidetracked almost by linear progression, when actually there were some small things which would be much bigger steps in the long run.
Yeah, from the outside looking in, I mean, I think the stadium thing was good. They've moved to a better stadium, quote unquote. Of course, we know the problems with having the players away from the pitch and the history of Upton Park and stuff like that. So I have some sympathy there, but I think your point is absolutely valid, Lawrence. I don't think they did enough to reinforce their team. Some of the things Chris mentioned, I think the losing Enner Valencia, who went on loan to Everton, who played fairly well for them last season. At the start of the season, when they were firing on all cylinders, he was a big part of that. So when you see the lack of product on the pitch, I wonder, had they focused, as you said, maybe more on stuff on the pitch as opposed to about the stadium, perhaps Bilic and West Ham wouldn't be in the spot they're in right now. Because I look at Bilic, Lawrence, and he looks like a man devoid of ideas right now. When you compare his reaction to the goals that went in this week versus goals we saw how angry he would get when West Ham made simple mistakes last season, even when they won. Right now, even when they're losing and dropping goals, he looks like he doesn't have a different plan.
Very good point. But Chris, to completely flip that, Southampton looked very good in this game. Tadic, Long, Højbjerg. Is it Højbjerg or is it Højbjerg or is it Højbjerg or is it, you know, whoever? Because matches they didn't seem to be able to make their mind up. And then, of course, Romeu offering a platform for those two guys to go forward.
It's the second one, so if he keeps in it like that, I'd be much appreciated.
Højbjerg.
I think the thing is with Southampton, they keep making these smart investments. So one of the things I really like about Højbjerg, apart from his passing and his movement and all of those technical aspects, is how much he drives the team on. There was an instance, I want to say near the end, maybe injury time, where there was a really sloppy pass. It was given away in the midfield third, and he's absolutely furious, and he's berating his teammate like it's 1-0, and it's just 10 minutes in. And I kind of love that mentality. I think he brings with him the standards of a big club. Right. And when you have a player who does that, it will, like a rising tide, raise all the ships around it. And they've got some consistency now, it seems, in Charlie Austin. Funny enough, a player that West Ham apparently turned down the opportunity to sign, and I think would be perfect for them at this precise moment. And it's about making those incremental changes. This is the thing, and I think I was guilty of this in the summer, talking about the fact that maybe they'd made one too many changes, has allowed one too many to go out. But actually, if you looked at it on the surface, Shane Long and Pelle and Tadic, they kind of shared the goals out last season. There wasn't really one runaway striker for them. So allowing Pelle to go for what was a good fee for a player of that age made complete sense. And I think the players they've been able to pick up, the likes of Nathan Redmond, they've actually given them a different dimension in the final third. Shane Long is very fast, but he's not someone I'd consider a dribbler per se. Nathan Redmond is, and it's telling that kind of pace and energy is what brings them most of their goals, because it does just unsettle the opponent and open up space in the way that it did for Austin with the first.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to like about Southampton this season. I've been away with their fans, good people. I hope they do well this season. Lovely kit too. That away kit looks good, doesn't it? Anyone else think that away? Anyone else just like a black away kit on this podcast? What's your favourite kit this season? Napoon?
Oh.
Feel free to pitch in at any point, Napoon. I mean, you know, you don't have to eat your dinner whilst you do this.
Red Bull Leipzig. Their away kit's quite nice.
Oh, interesting.
You
okay.
Really do love yourself some Red Bull Leipzig
we
this
really
season.
And Ajax's away kit is gorgeous as well.
Pronounce Ajax, but all right, mate.
It incorporates the three X's of Amsterdam down the middle.
Ah, nice. Yes, very good. Yeah.
X's always coming back into the picture.
Yes.
Lovely. I tried to pick one up quite recently when I was at Schiphol Airport, but they've shut the Ajax shop down, unfortunately.
Phew, okay. The way you picked up off the back of Napoon's comment there, it was a little worrying. Napoon, your favourite away kit or just kit this season?
Couldn't get on an airport anyway.
I like Sunderland's away. I like the pink. I'm a big fan of that jersey.
Wow. Okay, you really have hit middle age.
Yes.
Who shall I go for? I just like a nice.
Nah, Lapoon wears some well trendy clothes. I've seen his photographs.
Yeah, I know.
On Facebook.
Yeah, but that's because he only posts when he wears trendy clothes.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
He doesn't shop with Forever 21, but that's the theme.
Yeah. No, yeah. Got Forever 21, but just turned 30.
So about to turn 33. Thanks a lot, Lawrence. Fuck off.
You look great. you really do. Anyway, Arsenal 3, Chelsea 0. And it was indeed also Super Saturday, as North London was red, as Ozil said, Chris. Why isn't it working for Chelsea, though?
They're just disorganised. There was an instance in the second half.
I mean, surely that must be so fucking frustrating for Conte, who's just come from the most organised team in the world.
Well, that's the other thing, is there is a massive talent drop-off between the defenders at Juventus and the defenders at Chelsea, because, again, there is, though, and also they've had time to really bed in. They play together for the national team. It's just a well-oiled machine, the Juventus defence. But there was an instance in the second half where the Chelsea back four or whatever it is was running back to their goal, and it was kind of more like an R shape instead of a straight line.
Mm.
And it allowed Ozil in behind really easily. And that, for me, just embodies that, again, this team is just not very well put together. And it also, I think, puts a spotlight on the David Luiz signing, because he is not, for me, someone you sign if you're trying to build a stable back four.
Well, I mean, yeah, that is an interesting point. I quite like the risk element with Luiz here, but, I mean...
He's a good. I mean, look, he put on a great pass.
But in that second half, so many split open the defence.
But honestly, if I'm Chelsea, and I don't even think this is hindsight at this point, I would have much preferred them to try and go for a defender that maybe they overpaid for on the lower end, so kind of someone who's 15 to 20 million, than spending close to 40 on someone that you know is not the right answer.
Well, I mean, Chris, that's what I slightly feel contrasted with, and we'll come on to the Liverpool game later, but Liverpool have acquired Clavan and Matip, two ball-playing centre-backs, in the off-season for free and free. I think Clavan was free, or was he relatively low?
5 million.
5 million, sure. That's free. In the Premier League, that's free, Chris.
The most expensive Estonian goal, I would have thought.
Yes, but I mean, then the problem was that he did play in that absolute thrashing that Estonia took that time. He didn't.
Lawrence, can I ask you guys a question about...
If you must.
About Antonio Conte. What if we came up with this idea and talked about this? So Antonio Conte, we talk about the talent he's worked with. He's obviously a very good tactical manager. But what if, with Antonio Conte, the success he had with Juventus, with Italy, was not because of the players he had, but in spite of the players he had. I've talked about this on another podcast. So look at his career, right? With Bari, Atlanta, Siena, obviously Juventus and Italy are the ones we focus on. But even with Italy, the players he had in the Euros, if you look at Italy's squad as opposed to the squads across Europe, Italy's squad wasn't that great. Let's be honest about it. It was a fairly poor squad by Italy's standards. Juventus too. When he got to Juventus, they were in the they were basically the phoenix rising from the ashes. Of course, he had the likes of BBC then starting up. He had Andrea Pirlo, but perhaps we should look at Chelsea and the fact that it might not work for him because his system, his draconian measures rely on a player that is completely malleable versus the kinds of players at Chelsea who we know have a lot of power.
So then maybe I wouldn't put it down to it being in spite of the players, because I do think very often, you know, I mean, that Italy team was one of the best drilled teams. So it was clearly being, carried out by the players. Mm. So the players are clearly capable of that. I do sort of worry of that actually... And this is what I find unusual is that, you know, sometimes the perception of a manager really doesn't help with the analysis of a team. And the perception of Conte is he's a top end manager and therefore he must be a great manager. And I think it's also the fact he comes from Italy. People don't question him so much. And Nipum, maybe you can, you know, I mean, maybe you'll disagree with this a little bit because you're not the biggest Rafa Benitez fan. But I do feel like when Benitez, when Benitez wasn't able to make it work, it was very much, well, it's because Benitez doesn't know how to communicate with the players, or these players aren't right. And I get a similar feeling with Conte, that almost the players just aren't reacting, like you say, to his draconian ideas, or maybe that's a little harsh, but, you know, the ideas that he wants, which is hard work, essentially. And, you know, and that's all well and good every couple of weeks, you know, when Hazard wants to show people, yeah, I'm putting in a bit of work. But to actually do that every week takes a very different mentality.
It really does. And I guess it comes back to the fact that when things are going well, which was what was happening, right? The first 3 weeks, Chelsea ended up scoring goals, usually through Costa in the last minute. When things are going well, you don't really notice these things from your manager, because it manifests in the sense that you're winning games, morale is high. But when things are not going well, when you've just lost to Arsenal, one of your big rivals in London, how is the team going to react? And is the team going to look at what Antonio Conte is doing and have the same reaction they did when things were going well? And we don't know the answer to that. Historically, though, with Chelsea's players, and some of them are still there, aka John Terry, that has not been okay. As soon as things went poorly, it was always the manager's fault, and the players kind of, to use a very well-used analogy about Chelsea, threw the manager under the bus.
Oh, good. Their own bus that they parked ended up driving over him. Chris, to completely flip that, and there are some good things going on here at Arsenal. Arsenal hadn't scored in 3 seasons against Chelsea, and they decided to score 1 goal for each of those seasons.
They did, and I thought they played well. I liked seeing Sanchez in that false nine role. I think it worked best for his talents, and also I think took advantage of the fact that Chelsea came there to try and play. As I was talking to Napoon on the World Soccer Talk podcast, I don't think it's a role you can play when lesser teams come there and they try to shut down the space and essentially just inhabit their own half. But I think in games against sort of the bigger teams and those title rivals, it could be a really shrewd move to kind of keep using him in that role.
Mm. Does it worry you at all? I mean, yeah, I suppose now Arsenal are getting their players back. That is a good thing. You know, they can start to put all of them in the right orders. And this, you could arguably say, was the strongest Arsenal team of the season so far, right?
I'd say so. I think... Well,
except Xhaka, right, Chris?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I don't actually think it's a bad thing that they've got options. I think that can only be a good thing. If anything, I think in recent seasons, one of the issues they've had is that they haven't had options. They've had to rely on Cazorla and Coquelin in central midfield, period. No one else can really come in and do anything, because the reserves and the youth team just aren't at that level yet. So I don't think it's a huge concern for them personally. I think the performance from Cazorla was good. Let's see what Xhaka does now. Maybe that lack of pressure on him or that lack of expectation actually helps him grow in a really positive way.
I mean, Napoon, there is also the contrast of the substitutions made in this game, which are obviously Coquelin, Iwobi and Sanchez, contrasted with Hazard, Fabregas and Willian. Now, obviously, Marcus Alonso came on for Chelsea, as did Pedro, as did Batshuayi, but none of those made the effect that maybe a Xhaka, Giroud and Gibbs can have on this game. And ultimately, even though they changed their shape, Chelsea even then weren't really showing the options that they wanted.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as you said, they went three at the back, Chelsea did. And they maintained to hold the ball a little bit more than they did in the first half. But honestly, except for a couple of chances for Diego Costa, didn't create that much. There was that one time Pedro went through on goal, but a terrific tackle, I think it was from Bellerin, prevented anything to develop from it. So it's worrying for Chelsea, because the irony about all this is we had Fabregas start this game, and as you said, hindsight is 20/20, but it had Matic started alongside N'Golo Kanté. Now those are two midfielders that I can see dominate the midfield of Arsenal. So we'll never know the answer to that question, but it almost feels like Antonio Conte gave in to the general perception of needing to play Fabregas because he had been an impact sub. And honestly, in this game, which was a huge game, perhaps he should have gone with those two holding midfielders.
I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I also think, though, that just alone, Matic and Kante should be able to deal with, you know, the attacking line of Ozil, Walcott, Sanchez, and whoever else is on there with them. I mean, there's no disrespect to Arsenal. But I'm just saying, I think Matic and Kante are rated as two of the best central defensive midfielders in Europe last season. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this season, you know, that this formation doesn't seem to be dealing with them. And playing three at the back, like you say, it almost becomes a little draconian because it doesn't... It's just weird. But anyway, he must have his reason and thinking behind that. Finally, Napoom, we get on to your specialist subject. Good stuff, fantastic, great. Manchester United. 4-1 against Leicester, the champions. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Which makes us champions by the transitive property.
Champions elect, although there mm-hmm. have been other people that have already ripped that property off.
That was Liverpool, and that was a couple of weeks ago, so it doesn't count.
Mate, whatever United do, Liverpool have done it before, all right? You win a European Cup, done it. You have a Scottish manager who's inspirational, done it. What else have you guys fucking done? Didn't think so. Thank you very much. Anyway, get down to it, because it was a great day for Manchester United. Zlatan, Pogba, Nuno, great.
Yeah, I mean... It looked better, for sure. I think Mata playing behind Zlatan was way more successful than Rooney playing behind Zlatan. I think Squawker Davis would do a way better job of analyzing the tactical nous of that. But just from an observatory point standpoint, that looked like Zlatan was happier playing in that role. He allowed the likes of Rashford to run past him. Lingard was involved. Pogba running past him. So I think Zlatan needs that. He needs someone that allows him the freedom. And with Rooney, we've talked about this with Rooney for years, right? With Rooney taking up similar positions as some of the other strikers that have played at United, it can kind of prohibit them from reaching their potential. But more so than that, Wayne Rooney last week was just absolutely terrible, especially in the Watford game. And when he started midweek, I was kind of sure that he would be dropped for this game. And honestly, it was the right thing to do. Rooney still has a role in this Manchester United team, but just for now, he needs... Well, with Rooney, even Sir Alex in his last season brought the best out of Rooney, even though Van Persie was playing well, because he made sure to drop Rooney when Rooney wasn't playing well. One thing we know about Rooney is that he's a passionate player, and he gets annoyed when he's not starting. And Sir Alex was able to harness that anger to bring the best out of Rooney. And the last three managers, including the current manager, have not done that with Rooney. His place has been always guaranteed, and I think that's why we've seen one of the reasons we've seen such a huge drop in Rooney's performances. So hopefully, now that he has been dropped, he'll do better.
In the reserves.
In the U21s.
I mean, that was interesting, wasn't it? It was, Chris, the contrast here of how positive things felt for United. But then, for a while, it didn't look like it was going to be that way, and Leicester actually pushed in the first 20 minutes. I mean, you know, the commentary on 5 Live that I was listening to along with a totally legal stream was basically, you know, agreeing Leicester were dominating early on, and it really took the goal from United to change things and begin to change the mentality around Old Trafford.
Yeah, but in the same way that we don't necessarily talk about Leicester's performances last season, only the results, I think we have to do the same again this season. The results simply aren't there. They don't look, I think, nearly as clinical. I don't think they look actually as organised as they did last season. And I just envisage a really tough season for them in general. I think
it is funny you say organised, though, Chris, because there was a really good point made on Match of the Day tonight that Leicester might suffer as much as, you know, maybe a few of the other physical sides in the Premier League. Because actually, last season, Huth and Morgan were incredibly physical when marking people. They were touch tight, and sometimes more than touch tight, shockingly. And this new law now that is brought in has changed the way that they can touch players. So either they agree, look, we're going to give away some penalties or free kicks, or we're fucked.
The thing was last season, and I'll be honest, it was not a popular opinion to have. I felt there was a number of instances where Leicester were getting decisions that they shouldn't have been, that there were instances where their defenders were incredibly lucky to get away with the kind of things you're talking about.
It was a little bit and NBA in, come new NBA, wasn't it? You know, a bit when, you know, when kind of the old defenders transition out, the Bruce Bowens sort of leave, and the old style of defending was, it was almost mocked in a way. And suddenly people said, but look, we have to get tighter. We have to get tighter on these players.
I mean, in fairness, there was a few offside calls as well, I remember, that went their way. I think as well, where they will really struggle this season, and it necessarily didn't come to fruition in this game, is their opposition will not attack them in the same way as they did last season. Because I think there was actually a lot of arrogance in the opposition that faced Leicester last year, because every team kind of thought, we'll not fall for the same thing that the team the week before did or the week before that, and we'll be able to outplay them. I don't think that happens again. And you can see what they try to do in the summer. They try to essentially just replace and sign similar types of players to the ones they've got. So Ahmed Musa was essentially like Vardy. He could run. He was quick. You look at Mendy. He was essentially a Kante replacement. I think that's a very naive approach, actually. I think you need to be adding diversity there. And I said this last year as well. You look at Ranieri's history as a coach. Often in club jobs, the second year has seen a considerable drop in terms of the comparison between how they performed in the first season. And again, I just think it's going to happen here. I don't think they'll be anywhere near the top four. I think, honestly, if they make mid-table, they'll be lucky.
Well, yeah, if they make mid-table, that's probably the aim for this season, or to be even just to stay up at this point. But then, Chris, my argument to that would also be, how do you explain Bruges, for instance?
It's Bruges.
You know, very good point. So are you saying that when they host Porto this week, it's going to be different in the Champions League for Leicester?
Well, I mean, Porto aren't exceptional at this precise moment either. They're not really the dominant side in Portugal. Again, I just think when they come up against anyone with even a semblance of idea about what they want to do, they'll struggle. That's the thing. I just don't even think last season they were the most complicated team in the world. They really weren't. They were a back four that was able to stay together for large portions of the season, which helps immeasurably when you can name the same back four or back five. That builds a consistency, that builds a momentum that can take you from game to game. They sat quite deep. They had a midfielder that could cover ground exceptionally well. And they were able to facilitate counter-attacking goals really easily. And during that mid-season stretch, when nobody thought they would be anywhere near the top, teams just kept jumping onto them. They kept falling into the same pitfalls that their opponents the week prior had.
Good point.
I mean, I get this is the whole Cinderella element of Leicester. The thing is, when you look at the brass tacks of it, it was really frighteningly simple. There was nothing game-changing or complicated about it. If anything, it was a throwback that exploited the evolution of the game, not an evolution that took it forward.
And no one ever really thought that it was an evolution in that sense, did they? But it was built on clever observations, which are sort of almost predictions, if you like. They've all got their BMWs now; everyone's happy. What about United, though? I mean, you know, Mourinho stood to lose his third game in a row in the Premier League here, and if he had, that would have been the first time he'd done that since 2002, I think, with Porto. 2002 or maybe 2003. But the point is that United here need some consistency. You can't just have a 4-1 win against Leicester. Plenty of other people are having success against Leicester.
Yeah, and I think there's an overreaction from the Manchester United community about how quote unquote good Manchester United really were in this game, because outside of those 15-20 minute where they scored those four goals, three of which were set pieces, United really created very little. Last week they created very little. Before the break, Hull City, they created very little. First game of the season, they created very little. Man City, they created absolutely nothing. So the only game that stands out where Manchester United has created a lot of chances was the Southampton game, where they were truly dominant. So I look at this team, and there's a lot of work to be done. I think having Pogba score his first goal is a healthy thing for Pogba. It's lovely for Paul. A great dab. But But I still think there's a lot of issues that need to be worked on. How do you fit Rashford into the system? How do you deal with Wayne Rooney? How do you deal with the fact that Martial, who is currently injured, is not playing well? How does Mkhitaryan fit in? What is your starting midfield? Are you going with Pogba along Fellaini? Are you going for two in the midfield or three in the midfield? Herrera was magnificent this week, I thought, in both games, in midweek and also yesterday. So Herrera should be playing alongside Pogba, but probably not in a two. So there's lots of questions still, in my opinion.
Mm, yes, of course. Demarai Gray, fantastic. He was great.
Yeah. Well done.
Well worth it. Well worth a look. Let's move on a little bit. We can still go through some of this Premier League stuff. There's a lot more to come on this show. Bournemouth 1, Everton 0. Chris, shock. Shock.
Shock because Everton had a great start to the season. If you watch the game, I think Bournemouth had the better chances.
Yeah.
I think they created a good deal. Finishing wasn't ideal from them. I think that could be a bit better. That's something they need to improve on if they want to stay up this season. I also think on the flip side of that, Everton will look at the game and say that their own finishing let them down big style as well. There's a chance that Ross Barkley has in the second half where he jumps for a header that really kind of gets underneath. And if he kind of times it or judges it slightly better, it's a much easier chance for him, and you think he probably puts it in the bottom corner quite easily. Mm. So again, I don't think it's any reason at this point for fans to panic if you're an Everton supporter, because you have to lose eventually. I think ultimately they're fairly safe under Coleman. I think they'll have a very good season, Everton.
Interesting stuff. Of course, Bournemouth happy with the 1-0 there. Bournemouth looking to get to that points total and then away. Poon, I'm going to come to you for a second because Middlesbrough took on Tottenham. Son was a real highlight here, getting the two goals. And it's also lovely to be able to see Janssen get an assist.
Yeah, Janssen has struggled, hasn't he, since he started. Maybe playing without Kane will bring out the best in Janssen. Kane can play behind Janssen, I think. I think Kane has showed that last season when he's fit that he can play in the role, in the attacking midfielder, second striker role. But yeah, to come back to Son, he was excellent. Again, another brace. I think he scored three braces. Lots of braces. Great teeth for Son now. Will they lose him for the national service? That's the real issue. He has to complete 18 months before he's 29. So, maybe the fact that by then Kane will be back will level things out. But Tottenham good in this game. I think there was a lot to for Pochettino to hang his hat on. Middlesbrough were very poor, though.
Yeah, I mean, they still got the goal.
Yeah, but I think so when I look at Middlesbrough defensively, Callum Chambers, horrible the entire time. The second goal, I think, was a perfect example of that. Bergen didn't do much good either. I think had it not been for some poor finishing from Tottenham, I think it could have been worse.
Mm. Yeah. More on Tottenham in the Champions League just a little later. Chris is an interesting one. Liverpool 5, Hull City 1. When I say interesting, I mean, why is it interesting? Because Liverpool are a fully fitted squad. Hull City are not. Liverpool easily took advantage of this. They scored some great goals, but I get the feeling this is going to be more of a narrative for Hull this season.
I know I said I thought Hull could record a shock.
Did you really? Oh.
I did, yeah. Great. You've got a one up to your failures, haven't you?
You really do.
Failure is an orphan. Success has a thousand fathers.
I mean, Liverpool were ruthless here. I mean, that's the difference between maybe Liverpool under Klopp and Liverpool a year ago, is Liverpool ruthless.
And their pressing, which I think is something we will likely evaluate every week, was relentless in the opening exchanges. Yeah. And I think that's what really killed Hull, because if you watch it, they just couldn't build any momentum. They couldn't build any kind of attack because the players couldn't handle it. Mm. I think the main positive to take away from this moving forward is it would seem, based off that whole result, that Liverpool have been able to formulate a plan that realistically allows them to compete with the lesser sides at home, which I think often has been the situation that's tripped them up most. Because teams will come, they'll sit deep, and how do you pressure a team that is sitting deep? It's quite difficult.
You put your line even higher and press the guys who are deep and deep, right? And then, I mean, I guess that's the point with Mane, is that, you know, Mane was brought in to do that. Liverpool didn't start with Sturridge. They started with Coutinho, Firmino. Yeah.
And Mane.
And Mane, Firmino, not Firmino, Mora. And then, obviously, you know, a couple of other guys. And those guys were making runs. And it was actually really impressive. I mean, Firmino looked great in this game.
I think, to be fair, they all look great. Like I say, this is the thing, is it seems like they've been able to develop this. I will be very curious to see how they handle those teams that kind of sit in the middle, that are not the elite, they're not those title challengers like City and Arsenal, but they're also not as limited, for want of a better word, as Hull. Those teams that kind of sit mid-table, because they will present an interesting challenge. I think the good thing you can take away from it is, realistically, pressing and that kind of style doesn't really rely on technique, it's just effort. So as long as you've got the effort and the energy to do it, it's fairly sustainable across the season.
I do think that's what's interesting, is that what Klopp was referring to was almost muscle memory, or sort of instinctiveness, and almost programming a new instinct into the players as to what they need to do. And this worked out very well for Liverpool in that sense, because it showed the crowd that instinct did seem to be there. And obviously, it worked very effectively. Fantastic strikes as well from Liverpool, which won't always go in. So, you know, 5-1 maybe flatters Liverpool in a sense, in that it could or maybe should have been more. It's also worth noting, Sturridge came on and it changed the look and shape of that front line, which is impressive and good for Liverpool. Also, Klavan and Matip playing out well from the back, and Milner getting particular applause for being left back here. Interestingly, Liverpool now top of a lot of charts. I think it's a passing chart.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They're top on, I think they're also top on shots and shots on target. And they're definitely second or third in possession in the league at the moment. So impressive stuff. If stats matter at all. Thanks, Dave. At the same time, it's worth mentioning Anfield, apparently the atmosphere has changed somewhat. Some people in the top of the main stand saying that they were unable to hear the cop and at times felt a little bit removed from the atmosphere, which is maybe a little bit worrying because, you know, Anfield's obviously famous for that, but the bigger you make your stadium, I suppose, the harder it's going to be. However, apparently Hull City fans also saying they struggled to hear Liverpool. Not many though.
It feels like the library has become the most common chant across clubs in stadiums in England.
Yeah, it's also sort of, it's a nice insult, even if it is loud,
exactly.
Because it sort
it's
of
like
shuts
a pointless,
you up.
Pointless insult. Yeah.
Is this a library? Well, no, it's clearly defined on the local planning regulations as a stadium. No books in football. We all know that. Although a student of the game would very often say different, Napoon, and one big student would be Pep Guardiola. He studied Swansea City and then
great transition.
Dissertation on beating them 3-1.
He sure did. Chris and I were talking on World Soccer Talk, and we were clutching at straws. It's a great podcast, as you always say with France 3. It's a great podcast.
Great podcast.
We were trying to find a flaw in this Man City team, and maybe you can help us, Lawrence, because neither Chris and I were able to come up with one right now, because they are playing some magnificent possession football. Everything is along the ground. Everything is drawn from movement and these beautiful geometric geometric dance all over
you
the.
You could have said performances. Performances would have been lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not as good of a poet as you are, yeah. Lawrence. You're a poet. Yeah, I'm just not as good as you are. So I don't know. I can't find – I look at this team and I'm wondering – in some ways, it's a tragedy, in my opinion, that Liverpool plays Man City all the way at the end of the year, which I think it's last week in December that they play each other. Because the only team I can see undoing Man City right now a full-flowing Man City, that is. Of course, they can drop points against Swansea or someone, which they didn't in this game. But a full-flowing Man City, the only team I can see them being undone by is Liverpool. So I don't know. I don't find a flaw with that team right now.
I'm trying to think who else could undo them, really. That's a really good point. I mean, also then, one game, if you're winning the rest of them, you're somewhat of a machine.
Yeah, of course.
I guess confidence could be one, and confidence might be. I think that's where City have been very good so far, and the system has overcome maybe the individual misgivings or problems.
I mean, how much more confidence could you get than having, in my opinion, and most people's opinion, the best manager in the world? That gives you massive confidence.
I mean, that's a very reasonable point, and one that I probably struggle to answer, but my point with City would be, if we look at their starting 11 over the weekend, they had Sergio Aguero up front, Kevin De Bruyne, sub Raheem Sterling, David Silva, Gundogan looks fantastic. I'm still going to say, as a formation, it's obviously great. I still don't fancy Kolarov, Otamendi, or Sanya. And they will get better, but I also think they'll come up against better opposition than, with all due respect to Swansea, Llorente and Sigurdsson, even though Swansea tried, and that's what I really respect about Swansea and Bournemouth the week before. They both tried to play their football against City, so, because they almost realised it was not worth doing anything else.
I guess the only thing that I can think of.
But what about coming up against a pragmatic manager? I mean, like you say, someone like Klopp, or are we Tony looking Pulis. At a? Oh, that's what I was about to say. Is a Pulis style manager? When do they play West Brom?
I mean, closing down the keeper. That's literally everything that's come up again in terms of whenever I've seen City struggle, it's balls going back to Claudio Bravo, and that's literally the only thing that I've seen where I've thought, okay, they might concede here, is Bravo trying to be a little too clever and being closed down.
But Napoon, you've forgotten who Man City play next.
Mm.
In both competitions. First of all, they take on Wednesday night, brave Celtic. Celtic.
Lots of good tacticians in there.
And they're so top tactician. They're so brave the way that they go around Europe, facing all those other teams that think they're brave. And then they face, and these are the two challenges for me, the two teams that they've really got a great run here of City. It goes Celtic, Tottenham. I mean, come on. Then they play Everton. I mean, come on, then they play Barcelona. I mean, come on,
That's actually a game that legit will be fun to watch, because Guardiola didn't do well against Bayern against Barcelona last year when he was at Bayern, or last 2 years while he was at Bayern. So let's see how he does with City.
Yeah. I see what you mean though. And I'd still like to see someone get at that back line legit, as you would say, as you kids legit. Say.
Youths.
Still fantastic goals though, right, Chris? I mean, those goals. Them goals.
Great goals. Top goals.
Are you enjoying Sterling? I mean, how much do you... What is it that's changed in Sterling? Has anything even changed? You just told it because it has. What has changed?
Great question, Lawrence. Well framed.
I haven't seen Sterling this good since pre-Brexit.
Really good.
I think what it does cement is the notion that actually a coach has a lot of influence on a player. I think he's given him confidence, most of all, because obviously there was those newspaper reports that Guardiola texted him in the midst of Euro 2016 and basically said, I'll fight for you, I'll be in your corner. And I think that helps a lot.
Walk away for you. Yeah.
Sterling turned to Joe Hart and he went, "This is going to be really good this season."
Has he texted you yet? No.
What? No. Must have lost your number.
Probably just busy.
Yeah. Texting me.
But I think as well, he's made subtle changes into the decision-making process for Sterling. So one of the things I kind of felt about him last season was when he would get into the final third, he just had a nasty habit for trying to shoot when he should pass and vice versa.
Yes.
And in general, his one-on-ones were pretty useless. This time round, he seems to be in better positions in general. And usually when he's faced with the kind of situation that he would flunk last year, he has a pass option open or something like that. So have things changed? I think definitely in terms of the way the team plays and what they demand of him. And consequently, that's got more out of him in general.
He's also got, it's a great point, Chris. Mentality-wise, Sterling is made and broken on that mentality. And that's what he had in his previous best season at Liverpool. Even though he was obviously very good in his first season at City. You wish, Napoon. Obviously, his previous best season at Liverpool, he had someone alongside him who showed him what good decision-making was. And that was, of course, Brendan Rodgers, who said, "Hey, you should go with this agent." And secondly, Luis Suarez, who showed him what decision-making was in terms of being ruthless in the pass. Of course, Louis at that time, not making some great decisions out on the pitch.
You make a good point there, Lawrence, because maybe it's a fact that with all the players now at City who are playing well, it takes the pressure off Sterling. Whereas last season, a lot of the pressure was on Sterling because Aguero was missing for so much time. Maybe having De Bruyne play at a top level is a revert back to when he was at Liverpool and Sturridge and Suarez were hogging all the headlines and allowed Sterling to just play football.
It almost feels a little bit like Sterling wants to be one of the Miami Heat, you know? And I don't mean the Miami Heat now. God. I mean Miami Heat when they were great, because it's a little bit along the lines of, I don't know. Along those lines, saying, you know, we've got this great thing. We're incredible. You know, we're going to be really good. And everyone should watch us. He loves to be the center of attention. But we'll see. The Football Ramble just did such a great bit earlier in the week on, is it Seluk or Seluc?
I think you spell it idiot.
Yeah, I think you spell it Brexit. he says, and these are just great quotes. They just crack me up every time I read them. "If Pep Guardiola wants war, then he can have one." Brilliant. No one's asking, but fair enough. Guardiola wins a few games and he thinks he's king. I mean, what I loved was Marcus's reaction to this on the podcast. It was basically like, a few games. Barcelona and won a ridiculous amount of trophies. He then went and managed Bayern and won a ridiculous amount of trophies. He's now at the City and is almost promising a ridiculous amount of trophies. "I live in Europe, so I can say whatever I like and Guardiola can't stop me." It's just so great. What does he even mean by that? Like, what can he possibly mean by "I live in Europe, so I can say whatever I like"?
I mean, I think he's referring to freedom of speech at best, but the absurdity of the situation is that, yeah, he can say anything that he likes, but Guardiola is the guy managing his players, so Guardiola can literally do whatever he wants. But
it's literally also the case that Guardiola has never tried to stop him saying anything.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What do I need to apologize for? Okay, I'll apologize if Guardiola apologizes to Manuel Pellegrini for what he did to him. I suppose what he's talking about there is that Guardiola was essentially came out a bit too early, right? And undermined Pellegrini. Not that Pellegrini ever really looked like he gave a shit.
Exactly.
If about you're a gentleman, this just does not happen. He signed a new contract last year and then he gets pushed out for Guardiola to come in. Pellegrini was a gentleman. Basically what he's saying is, I got backhanded. Guardiola also needs to apologise to Joe Hart. It is not normal and it's not right to come to England and to get rid of him, to get rid of a few English players. They send away many people from England. Yeah, because all the English players are flooding out the country and they have a lot of Spanish people there. Brilliant. Now he is pro-Brexit. When you come to a country, you must respect the country and respect its people. brilliant. When Yaya went to Man City, they could only dream about Champions League. The biggest stars in Europe did not want to come to City, but Yaya came. Is there not a quote out there?
What did they say about Yaya?
But is there a quote out there, someone from Pep Guardiola who said, didn't he tell Yaya Toure, you're going to a shit team?
Yeah, it's a shit club, yeah.
Brilliant. They weren't a big club. After he arrives, they started winning 2 league titles, cups, and now the semis of the Champions League. God, imagine winning the cup of the semi of the Champions League. Mm-hmm. I want City to win everything.
Top 4 in the Champions League, Lawrence.
Yeah, well, no, very good point. It's just ridiculous. Just crazy. I want Man City to win everything, to win all their games, because it means more trophies for Yaya. I think he doesn't realise what he's doing here. I mean, Chris, we've spoken time after time on the podcast about client management. You're a professional in it. This is, again, shooting yourself in the fucking head.
I'm glad you said head, because I was going to correct you for a second there. He sounds like an idiot, to be honest. There's no other way to dress it up. He sounds like a complete idiot.
I mean, like the Ramble said earlier in the week, you almost imagine Yaya Toure just going to training and being asked to just pick up the cones. No need to train today, mate. Why? Is he still your agent? Yeah. Okay. See you around.
You've got to think what impact it has on future deals as well. If there's a promising player that has the chance to work with Guardiola and he's represented by Selig, I can't imagine that's the easiest sell in the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, or the easiest buy.
I've never understood these agents who are kind of so prominent and so eager to talk like that. And it's just, from my understanding, you're paid to look after the interests of your client, not yourself. And there's far too many who just try to look after themselves.
Very good. But great quotes. Really good. I mean, just imagine being the journalist taking that quote. You know? And since when do bloody agents love? I mean, that is 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 7 paragraphs there. You know?
And you made sure to read all of it, Lawrence.
And I did make sure, and I did read it all, apart from the very end, which says, I respect managers like Ranieri, who achieve without spending so much money on so many players. Brilliant.
Yet he's the one to engineer Yaya Toure's move from Barcelona to Man City. Right.
Fantastic.
Jesus. You want managers to spend money, you giant fucking idiot.
Yeah.
It's literally like the turkey going, right, when can I get in the oven?
I'm a great fan of what you do with my people and cranberry sauce.
Oh,
when can we get started?
Ooh, what a succulent asshole. I wasn't actually quoting the turkey there. I was quoting what I believe to be the habits of him. Let's finish on one of the best games of the weekend. Sunderland 2, Crystal Palace 3. Kristen. Poor David Moyes. Happy Hanny. Connor Wickham.
Well, pardon Yola. I was surprised to see, and I said this to Napoon before, I was surprised to see Moyes throw the players under the bus in his post-match comments.
Oh, I thought he meant literally.
No.
That really would be great, Sky.
No one there looked, they'd missed them probably at this precise moment.
Oh, shit, we're not reversing.
The bus would go down the stairs or something like that. I think he's not done, this isn't the first time he's done this season already. He's done it a few times. And the partition he's creating between the two is very concerning, because when that relegation battle rolls round, one which he's already confirmed they're in, all of 5, 6 games in the season, they're going to need each other. And when you've spent a good portion of the early season saying that it's their fault they're in this mess, I don't really know what that achieves. I mean, he did similar with Adnan Januzaj, saying that he needs to buck his ideas up and it's his fault his career is stalled. Again, I don't know what that achieves. It seems to me very stick heavy with little sight of carrot, which doesn't seem the most conducive to success. In terms of the actual play itself in the match, the second that Palace managed to score one, Sunderland looked absolutely terrified. The decision making was poor. It looked like it was filled with uncertainty. Instead of trying to go for a third, they just looked desperate to hang on for at first kind of a win, 2-1, and then a point. And you look at that last goal, and Moyes even said it himself, why are we giving Benteke a free run on goal in the last 30 seconds. Because he did. He basically hung on the edge of the very edge of the penalty box and then had a free run into goal to run and jump at a header. It was absolutely criminal. I still don't know how that came to pass.
That's a good point about... sorry to jump in, Lawrence, but that's a good point about David Moyes, because I wonder if he's just a man who's trying to find... Well, he is, but it sounds like a man who's really trying to find his feet again in football. Because as you point out, him throwing out the bus, it's something he never did. So at Everton, he always protected the players. We remember times when Fellaini would throw elbows, which he still does to this day, but Moyes always protected him. Steven Pienaar having poor performance after poor performance, Moyes protected him, went to Man United. So many players played so poorly for David Moyes, and yet he never came out and directly insulted any players or even said that, you know, players didn't follow his tactics or anything of that sort. We remember Van Persie having absolutely poor performances, Rooney, all of these players. Even at Real Sociedad, he had some players that really he could have criticized. Yet, 6 games in, he's doing it at Sunderland. So it almost feels like he's a man who's short of confidence and needs is trying something new, I guess.
Well, I mean, yeah, still plenty to come. Big game of the week is obviously still lined up, guys. Burnley, Watford. But there's plenty more going on around Europe. Barcelona won 5-0 against Sporting. Neymar, the centre of that one. Las Palmas obviously drew with Real Madrid, making it interesting there as well. And clearly one of the most interesting games of the weekend, and I can't stress this enough, was Villarreal 3, Osasuna 1, Atletico Madrid 1, Deportivo 0 in Serie A. Juventus still keep themselves on the top, but Napoli very close behind that. Inter slipping behind to a 1-1 with Bologna. Napoli keeping pace there in Serie A. Chris, I mean, this is the sort of thing, early on, it's obviously very easy to keep up with Juve, but is that the worry that the old lady will get away? Like Wayne Rooney said. No, is that the worry?
I don't think it's the worry, it's the reality. You look at the team, you look at the depth, there's just far more than anyone around them. And you're looking for a superhuman season from one of those rivals, I think, to unseat them. So, yeah, for me, it's not a huge surprise to think of Juventus as Serie A champions. I think they record that victory quite easily. So, yeah, at least there'll be some intrigue. It was nice to see Joe Hart get a win with Torino.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, arguably one of the hardest game that Joe Hart's faced so far this season. I think I saw a tweet from... I think it was James Horncastle who basically said, let me try and find it for you. Basically, he's going to be facing the guys who have taken the most shots this season from inside the box and had some of the most successful opportunities in Serie A. Oh, sorry, not Siri. Ah.
That was exceptionally timed. It was planned. I'm pleased to see Hart in Serie A. He's making history one way or another. He conceded Totti's 250th goal. So, you know, he'll go down in history regardless now. I think Roma are an interesting prospect. I like a lot of their attacking options. Salah and Stefano Sharawi are two of the more exciting, I think, attackers in Serie A. Again, it's just that consistency, I think, and that's what will define the title race for me is how do they manage that, because I don't know if they have the depth personally, Roma. I look at that team and that squad and I just wonder who's coming in behind them.
Yeah, very good point. You also sort of feel the same at this point in Liga, where, you know, PSG's result and then top of the league at the moment, Chris, running away with it, essentially, is a side that... Wait, hold on. Actually, no. Some people did expect this, right?
Sorry, what was the question? I sneezed.
Good. Nice, top of the league in Liga. And that's very Nice.
It is. Balotelli. he's not thrown pasta at anyone, and now his life's come together. What a coincidence.
Fuck. Most people are shouting, fuck.
They are developing a habit for rehabilitating these former wonder kids.
Can't wait to see him play for PSG.
I was going to say, I'm curious to see if Sonny Pike is the next to pitch up at Nice and see what he can do with his career. I think...
Freddie Adu?
Watching... No, there's no hope for him. Watching PSG against Toulouse on Friday, I thought they were really poor. Di Maria in particular was pretty shocking. In fact, L'Equipe ran the headline that Paris takes a slap, and I think that's the best way to describe it. I don't know. You know what it is? The more I watch PSG, the more I think they'll likely be okay in the league. They've just got too much individual quality, I think, for anyone to mount a serious challenge. I can see them tanking the Champions League, though. I think they'll, for a team that's done not too bad in recent seasons, I think they've got to the semi-finals the last few years or the quarter-finals. I don't see that repeat this time around. I think they'll really struggle. I think, in fact, they could even go out in the group stages.
Wow. Over in Bundesliga, Dortmund 3-1 against Freiburg. Chris and a couple of other people on the part of directors towards, is it Kayla Knapp on Twitter, who said Dortmund's last four games, 20 goals, 12 different goal scorers. Just how? She asks.
They look very impressive, Dortmund, at the minute. They're playing with real fluency. Guerrero, who they signed from Lorient, they've actually shifted him inside. He was predominantly a left-sided player when he was in France. But they've moved him inside, and it's had a really big impact on not just his performances, but Dortmund in general. He's a funny old case, Guerrero, because he's Portuguese, played for Portugal this summer in the Euros, but didn't actually speak fluent Portuguese when he joined the club because he was raised mostly in France.
Ah, okay. So he's taking a slightly different route in that sense.
So there were actually some linguistic issues when he first joined up with the Portuguese squad, and I think some of them are still present. But yeah, it's one of those things, I guess.
Yeah. Dortmund march on, as to Bayern 1-0 against Hamburg. And then, Chris, talk to me about Leipzig. RB Leipzig.
Oliver Burke has his first Bundesliga goal. Watching him, he just reminds me a little bit of Gareth Bale as a youngster, which is an immense amount of pressure to put on a young man, but still.
Which
just
level
more
of
the
Gareth
ways...
Bale? I mean, was this before or after they tried to sell him?
Kind of very, yeah, probably about that time, actually, when he first joins Tottenham, and he's, you can tell he hasn't quite filled his body out yet.
Great left back.
Awkward.
He was. but yeah, I think he's got all of the physical tools, and he seems a very confident young man as well. And his goal was actually really well taken against, I think it was Cologne they played.
It was Cologne, yeah.
And I think, for me, it gives me an extra incentive to watch the Bundesliga because I'm very curious to see how he pans out. It's a little bit of a risk. I don't know how much say he actually had in accepting the transfer to Rebel Leipzig. But again, it looks like it could be a one that really helps his career.
Cologne number one. Presumptive, but still a good club name.
Smells good.
Anyone know why there are so many? There seem to be so many numbers in German tea. Is it just still, you know, it's a bit Vorsprung-Durst technique? Is a little bit sort of, you know, it's a bit like Leicester City 05, you know, or Leicester City 16, I suppose. You know, there are a lot of numbers in German football. Why? Anyone? Because
no,
literally, I can't find any numbers, really, for other sides. I know there's, like, you know, important numbers for other sides, like, you know, Liverpool, 5 European Cups. or, you know,
zero Premier League titles,
yeah. Which, if you put those two together, looks a bit like a 50. Does anyone else notice that there's sort of certain qualities to each league's names? You know, like MLS is clearly very, 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 very clearly like that. Speaking of which, Chris, do you want to chat a little bit about MLS? Because you've been writing some great summaries of the league for Yahoo and a couple of other people over the last week. I read you. Was it ESPN that you did your last summary for? Which you tweeted out?
Yahoo.
It was Yahoo, excuse me, my mistake, sorry. I won't cut that out, but yeah, thanks for your own plug. Which you tweeted out during doing the last
Yeah, because Jordan Morris scored twice, and he's now the highest scoring American rookie in MLS history. And he's done really well because he's had an exceptional amount of pressure on him this season to kind of deliver as the next great American hope. And it hasn't always gone well for him. He's missed some easy chances. But I think as the season and the year has progressed, so too has his talent and ability, as I think he's learned. And having sat down and talked to him and interviewed him once or twice, he's just a very nice guy. He's very relaxed. He's not arrogant. He's really could kind of just believe that he's, you know, your mate from back home. He's very personable. And I think he'll only continue to get better as things go on.
How much better?
I think he's easily good enough to play in Europe. I mean, he had that offer with Bremen at the start of the year, opted not to take it, signed for Seattle, play at home. I think there comes a point where he goes to Europe. I really do. I think he's got exactly what you need. He's benefiting now from the fact he's getting consistent match time, which is helping him learn a lot, whereas I don't think he gets that necessarily at Bremen. Overall, I think he could play in Europe. I think he could have an established career in a top league in Europe as well. I think he is that good.
Now let's get down to it, guys. There is some good stuff going on this week in the Champions League, but not least that you can go over to FanDuel, and if you use the code IAMTheHole when you sign up for FanDuel, then you guys can get some great deals through our very good deal. Nipun, are you on FanDuel?
I am, because of the podcast.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff. Okay, you're not in the UK, so you didn't help our shit stats, but still, it's great that you support us. You big into your fantasy football? I mean, you are an American.
Not, that would be a lie if I said I was. But FanDuel is a lot of fun.
You weren't until you heard our adverts.
Until it was TF3, great podcast.
Great podcast. Anyway, you guys can head over there and join us there. You can find me at, well, I think it's not at, it's just Lozcast TF3. You can also find Dave. I think it might be Dave Talks TF3. And when Adam Boltwood gets back, he's also going to sign up. And as will Kristen very soon. Right, Chris?
Almost definitely.
Almost definitely. Anyway, head over there, because this week you can play in the Champions League competitions. I've not actually received the email yet from FanDuel, but we will tweet out which league you're supposed to go enter. You basically get a little bit more money if you sign up through us. So you get a better offer, essentially. And you'll also be showing FanDuel that you listen hard enough to our podcast and care enough to go over and sign up. Please do go over and sign up. I am the whole is the code, all block capitals, all worth it, because this week you will be fielding some fantastic players. For instance, on Tuesday night, Chris, some great games out there. Dortmund, Real Madrid to start. I mean, geez.
That looks like it could be a cracker, just because of the form of the two teams. Dortmund look great again at the weekend. And Real Madrid had that little bit of a...
Yeah, I mean, two all against Las Palmas.
With Ronaldo.
Yeah, what was that?
I mean, in fairness, Las Palmas have started really good. Yeah. They're no slouches. The thing is, it's the Ronaldo substitution and how much that defines the politics around that club, which, again, you could have a separate podcast just discussing that.
AKA Juice says, with Real Madrid looking out of ideas when they reach the final third, are we finally seeing the true management of Zidane? I feel like that's a little bit unfair.
Yeah.
Because obviously he shaped the team after Benitez left. But I mean, you know, what are we to read about their lack of, in inverted commas, creativity? They still scored two goals in this game. Nipun.
Yeah, I think with Real Madrid, the analysis is always, when we look at their tactics, which manager in the last 10, 15 years has really added any sort of new tactic to Real Madrid? And the only person I can think of is Ancelotti when he played Di Maria in that three-man midfield. Beyond that, it's a team of individuals, of brilliant individual talent. So I don't think maybe I'm doing Zidane a disservice just by saying that too, but I don't think them dropping points and maybe not scoring four or five goals like they did in the first couple of games of the season means they're not firing on all cylinders. It's just that when you have your best, one of the two best players in the world not firing, and you don't have, you know, Neymar and Suarez behind him, but you have Bale, who himself is struggling for injuries. You have Rodriguez, who is struggling for form. You have Isco, who is in and out of the team. Maybe that's simply the reason. Your team of individuals isn't firing on all cylinders. That should be the analysis of Real Madrid.
Well, you can put definitely some Dortmund players in that FanDuel team. And then don't hesitate to look for... Oh, you know what? There's some good ties in here. Anyone else want to shout out a tie? I do like Spurs going away to
Celtic Man Moscow. City, baby.
Celtic Man City is on the Wednesday. Am I Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
correct. Wednesday. Yeah, and not least also Gladbach taking on Barcelona, which would be a great game.
Yeah,
and then obviously
Atletico Bayern.
That's exactly where I was going to go after that.
Well, I went there first, Lawrence.
I mean, sure, you went there and you stayed there.
I went there.
You're more than welcome to it.
Never come back.
Napoon, thoughts on this game? Because obviously, you know, Atletico Bayern, the last time they met, mm-hmm. when was that? That would have been the time when Bayern just about squeezed through.
Mm-hmm.
Last season, actually. Last season.
Yeah, I watched Atletico this week, and even though they only won 1-0, they were absolutely dominant against Deportivo La Coruña. I think there's something at Atletico Madrid that feels different though from last season. Even though, so forget about the off-field stuff with the contract. You know, everyone's talking about the Simeone contract stuff, but even on the pitch, it seems to me that Simeone, maybe it's because of what he's dealt with, there's almost an attempt to a new system. I feel like they're possessing the ball a lot more than they did last season, and that will come up against Bayern, who we know, because of what Guardiola has infiltrated into the minds of those players, that's even though Ancelotti is trying to change it, rightfully so, there's still that belief that Bayern Munich will move the ball around. So we are coming up to a battle where last season Atletico Madrid would have been a perfect for this Bayern Munich right now, and you kind of hinted at that in your question. But this Atletico Madrid, which is slightly tweaked from last season, I don't know how they do against Bayern. And I genuinely believe that Bayern might wallop them.
Interesting, because long-term form, which essentially means nothing in this because it's spread over so many seasons and so sporadic, would suggest that Atletico are at home. The Vicente Calderon, which they have won 25 of their last 30 European matches there, and Bayern have won just 2 of their last 10 Champions League away matches.
FanDuel.
Losing 5 and drawing 3. They've not got a historically a fantastic record.
Yeah, but my point still is that Atletico Madrid this season is not Atletico Madrid last season. Same with Bayern. Bayern this season is not Bayern last season. The way he's using Frank Ribery off of the bench, I think that's different. I think in midfield, absurdly, Bayern Munich to me looks stronger in midfield this season than they did last season. So I don't know. I still consider Bayern to be favorites. Maybe wallop was a huge exaggeration.
Yeah.
I'm trying to clickbait people who are already listening to the podcast, Lawrence.
Please do go follow him, Nipun Chopra 7.
That's it. You got it right. First try, Lawrence. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
I think Bayern, in my opinion, are favorites.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I think I was actually just trying to do a really good the guy from the Football Weekly. An impression of him.
James Richardson.
James Richardson. He always drops in some great stats, and I'm always really impressed. Just some nice little historical.
I was impressed, Loz.
Yeah, thanks. And then also, Chris, and you will enjoy this one because it's slightly off the wall. Napoli-Benfica. Beautiful.
Yes, I will enjoy you, right?
Yes, and then obviously Arsenal take on Basel at home. That will be also.
Basel are doing cracking, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, they haven't lost a game this season.
Well, that will
continue. In fact, the gap between themselves and second place is greater than the gap between bottom of the league and second place.
Wow. Okay.
They've got Seydou Doumbia as well, who was always a Champions League favourite.
Yes, and everyone loves that name anyway, because A. Seydou is good, and Doumbia is also fantastic.
He's 28 again this year.
how is he doing? Anyway, of course, Leicester take on Porto, like we said earlier, and Spurs away in Moskva. I wish we said Moskva in the English language. It's just so much prettier. Monaco, of course, taking on Leverkusen. That's a fantastic game on the Tuesday night. Monaco, of course, beating Spurs in the first round. And then Sevilla taking on Lyon. Yeah, I think that's about it for interest-wise. Sporting, obviously, take on Legia. Warsaw in the last...
For Ludogorets, your beloved Liverpool rival.
Great guys. No, when you say right, I love how you put them on the same level when you say Ludogorets and Liverpool. Instant rivals.
Yeah. What can I say?
You talk guys a big game together. For a United fan who's just lost away from home in the Champions League. It wasn't the Champions League, it was the Europa.
It wasn't in the Champions League, it was in
that's
Europe.
That's awkward. Of course. Fantastic to have you on the podcast, Napoon. Anyone else got anything to drop in, sort of sporting wise? I feel like we've covered quite a lot on this podcast tonight.
Bradley Wiggins, or have we not got the legal team to discuss that?
No, I mean, we can discuss it if you want. I mean, Bradley Wiggins being accused of sort of using illegal drugs in the sport, Chris. What's your view on this? Because a lot of people, obviously, he's been hacked. He sort of says he's very open about using steroids, etc., etc.
You know when people said he's a wonderful character?
Yeah.
I just thought that was code for he's really obnoxious, but he's very good at what he does, so we can't point that out. And now that he's been caught doing drugs, everyone can go, actually, he's really obnoxious.
Have people been saying he's really obnoxious?
No, but I would like to lead that charge. And I won't even need steroids to do it.
Very good. Yeah, you'd be ahead of the peloton, essentially, Chris. I mean, he comes across a little bit cocky, but I mean, he's still... Yeah, well, I mean, Chris, let me ask you this question. When was the last time that a cyclist was accused of doing something illegal and then it turned out to be true?
True. That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's the same with cricketers. It's like, just know your place in the food chain.
Brilliant. I mean, he's the Olympian that has achieved the most for Britain ever.
Like, the thing is, right, so for those who don't know, I live in Durham.
Yeah.
And apart from having semi-professional football team, cricket is the sport here.
Come on, Chris.
And the amount of times I saw cricketers peacock around nightclubs, and I thought, I've genuinely got no idea who you are unless someone tells me.
Yeah, but Chris, at the same time, you can't say, know your place in the food chain, and then start the next sentence, I live in Durham. You know, it doesn't work that way.
But that's exactly why I don't come down to the London place and start acting all Billy Big Bollocks. I'm well aware I've done exceptionally well to get out of a mining town.
Yeah.
In Big Bollocks' defence, she had elephantitis, so...
Yeah. In the same way that Gary Goals also had that issue. Anyway, it's been good to have you guys. Thanks a lot for coming along tonight. Do head over to FanDuel. I am the hole is the code. It's just good, and we're playing it. Dave is absolutely loving it. He's actually won some money so far on it. I think he's the only one that's won a bit of money on it, but still worth going over.
Maybe he's got time to play.
Yeah, I mean, he is busy. He was out on a date tonight, Chris.
Whoa.
Yeah, sometimes he gets a bit funny about us saying dates, because I think he thinks that girls go and listen to the podcast after he's been on a date.
No, of course, that's what they do.
Yeah, I've not heard enough from this guy. Yeah. Actually, love, when we fall asleep, do you mind if I just play the podcast that I'm on? Yeah. Anyway, great guy, Dave. If we're not accusing the people of doing drugs on this, then we're accusing them of falling asleep next to a woman. So, yeah.
With many fingers and many pies.
Anyway, Napoon, I'll see you again soon as well, right?
Thanks, Lawrence. Great to talk to you and Chris.
I know, right? It's been really good. We'll see you guys all again soon, right?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Right.
Yeah. See you again soon on TF3.